Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
He still has that desire and appetite. He'll be back, you know. I mean, and he's a fit. You know, he looks after himself. He runs a lot. He looks after his body. So he'll be back again. He wants that eight desperately, I think, you know, inside, even though he sort of talks it off a little bit. But I think he wants it desperately.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.
All right, we are here in an empty Aviva Stadium where Leinster have just booked their ticket to Bilbao with a 29-25 win over Toulon. I'm here with Andy Dunn. Andy, I actually don't even know where to start. Was your heart in your mouth in those last 10 minutes as mine was?
Absolutely, along with the rest of the stadium.
Yeah.
But I think for a semi, if that's the joy of sport, like a semi-final, why would you want it to be easy? It was torture. First half was a classic Leinster performance of recent years where they should have been 15-20 points clear. They left a couple of tries behind them, but they were playing with real excellence and threat.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow to go in 14-11 and 13 men against 15, it looked like one of these unfortunately characteristic implosions. Then they pull away in the second half. And I actually said it live on air. I think it's all over at 29-11. And how wrong I was again. So this Leinster team love to give people heart attacks, particularly in knockout games. But nobody cares when you win. So I think there's a lot to be said for the character of the group after last year's semi-final. And again, those nail-biting last five minutes where nobody could barely watch, but they got it done.
Yeah. That first half was chaotic. Talk to me about some of the refereeing decisions. I think the two yellow cards, fair enough, you could see where they came from. But then moments later when Rico Ioane gets a high hit, enough for him to go off for a HIA, you're thinking, is there a little bit of an imbalance here?
Oh, bizarre. A bizarre imbalance, because they were identical. I mean, there's either a head collision or there isn't. And we've got the technology. It shows the head collision. I think, ironically, Luke Pearce was consistent for the first two, which you applaud. I'd say the onus is on the tackler to lower their body height. And even if we saw it in the Six Nations, I think it was, or one of a recent game at Munster, where Craig Casey, even at his small height, took a hit to the face, got a nosebleed. There was no intent, but he got yellow carded. And if you're going by the letter of the law, that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
The onus is on the tackler to drop their height. So we get two in a row, and lo and behold, 4 minutes later, Charles Olivan gets a head contact with Ioane, and he glosses over it like it didn't happen. So that was really disappointing from a refereeing point of view, from a consistency point of view. Yeah, and from a Leinster point of view, they'd be raging.
Yeah, it must have been really frustrating for them. How impressive is it, with that in mind, how they came out in the start of the second half? 13 men dominated the first 10 minutes. Guy Ringrose try, obviously. And they just looked calm. They looked like this wasn't going to faze them.
Well, it was phenomenal. If you ever want a barometer of, you know, the spirit in a group, how do they perform when at 14 or 13 men? The likes of Caelan Doris, the physical work he got through, Tom Clarkson, to a man up front, Dan Sheehan, multiple carries in the first 5-6 minutes, multiple carries, thankless carries into traffic, winning collisions they no right to win. And it was when Ringrose got that try, he's a man of, I suppose, contained emotion. It was a raw, aggressive celebration into the fans. It was a statement of intent from that group to say, well, we refuse to lie down. And what we've seen in Leinster, unfortunately, in recent years is not a surrender, but a implosion. It might have been psychologically or tactically or technically, but they really had it up, put it up to them physically there with 13 men, and to be as dominant as they were in that first 10 minutes, I think is the type of thing permeates through the group, builds belief, shows them that, you know, when they're down in numbers and down on key personnel, that they had the capacity to come through. So I thought that was a massive statement by that group in that first 10 minutes.
I think that's a really interesting point, because passion is something that sometimes we don't see on the faces of the Leinster players as much as maybe the Munster players, who it's often like them against the world, and they're screaming for every decision. But when Caelan Doris crossed over for his try as well, he was screaming on the ground. You really saw how much it meant to them. Mm. It feels to me like the difficulties of the season, the difficulties of this game, it's almost unlocked another level to Leinster that's not just their class on the pitch, but they have this like intense emotion and need to get through this.
Yeah, there was a guttural kind of instinct about that performance that you'd fall in love with, you know, as a fan, because they're so hard at times to like in the last few years. You want to see them do their best, and when they've been far better than other teams in semis or finals, they've had a complete reversal. But I think this adversity they've gone through, it can be the making of a group. And I think I haven't seen a Leinster team play with that level of heart in a long, long time. I thought it was just inspiration at times in that second half. For sure, it was fraught with mistakes. I still have issues around the defence, and it looks like half the team at times have commitment issues to that defence, because it's a massively risky operational system that they don't use half the time when they're with, you know, when half of those players are with Ireland. So it's just been a really difficult road for them, yet they've wound up in a European Cup final. And you know, they will be underdogs, rightly so, which I think will actually suit the group.
Do you think I don't want to ask, is heart enough? Because obviously they had moments of really good rugby as well, but as you said, moments of not so good rugby and a lot of mistakes and ill discipline.
Yeah.
Will it be enough?
No, heart alone I don't think is ever enough at this level. I think it can be make a difference when you're going well or reasonably well strategically and technically. You obviously need a bit of luck, but you can't forget that's, you know, the starting team there is basically the Ireland starting forward pack, and you could argue 5-6 of the Ireland back line. When they put on this Leinster shirt and they play different systems in recent years, they just haven't fired to the level they have within the Ireland camp. And you know, that's been a question mark too. But what they also have then in those same players is the learned experience of going to knockout rugby and losing. And if you can put a psychological positive spin on that gives resilience, that gives a sense, look, we've been here before, we know what to do. I think there was an element to that today. Toulon, vast majority of that group haven't played in the European Cup semi-finals, so even though they nearly won it in the last few minutes, Leinster somehow scraped through and had the wherewithal to do it. So there's something to be gained from learned experience, and obviously the personnel have huge individual experience at the highest level. Collectively and in terms of cohesion, Leinster just still not quite there for whatever reason.
You mentioned the defence. It's a funny one that at times it looks like they're fully committed and they're racing out of the line, and I think it was Tommy O'Brien in the opening half, like a huge hit and it works, and then other times they're kind of backing off and looking around them, and all of a sudden there's space out wide. Did it malfunction today again, or was there moments that it was working in the way that we think Nina Barr wants it to work?
Well, there's no such thing as a perfect defensive system. All defensive systems will malfunction. I think this defensive system can malfunction more frequently than it should, because it's dependent on slowing down opposition ball. That's when it really works. If you can slow down opposition ball at the breakdown, you get your defensive line set. You need an extra second or two for that. And then the wider defenders like Tommy O'Brien or Gary Ringrose, they decide the timing of the defence. They lead the line in this kind of, I suppose, reverse of the typical defence. So that requires a lot of work constantly. It requires work at the breakdown. And what you then see is it looks to come to fruition out wide. You see Tommy O'Brien smashing someone man and ball. As soon as Toulon got momentum, you're in massive trouble. You can't implement that defence on the back foot. And I think that's the problem, because you can't maintain front foot play against these quality sides for 80 minutes. Now, South Africa have used that defence and won two World Cups. Mm. So you can say, look, it clearly works. Mm. But you've got a group and a personnel in South Africa who are stronger up front probably than anyone else. They're better at slowing ball down, at breakdowns. And so that leans into South African having this dominant defence more often because they're on the back foot less often. There's a danger where Leinster have fallen between stools over the last year and a half trying to implement that. And obviously you have a danger with half of the Irish team or three quarters of the Irish team having to dance and hurdle between one defensive system to another in majorly intense competitions. So I think, yeah, it's you're right. A bit like their attack, in patches it looks glorious and in defence it looks impenetrable until it doesn't and they look really vulnerable. So they're, again, what way do you want your sport to be? It was massive entertainment. Mm. So tricky.
There's 3 weeks I think now until Bilbao, and they'll obviously continue to play the system within the URC games in the build up to that. Mm. Do you think that'll help, just more time in the saddle playing this shape?
You know, at this stage I think that they've enough mileage to play the system. Familiarity helps and repetition helps, but I think the key thing against a Bordeaux team is
Bath.
Yeah, true. My bias there. I can't see Bath beating Bordeaux in Bordeaux, but either of those teams have unique playmakers in Jalibert and Finn Russell. Both would be very attuned to playing against that rush defence and picking it apart. So I'd have grave concerns about that defence going into a final against either of those playmaking tens who love that defence, because it's a defence that suits impulsive and instinctive tens, because the gaps open up and they read them as they see them. So I'd have grave concerns around it. Yeah, I don't think 3 more weeks in the URC repping it will help. What will help is maybe an intensity at the breakdown to slow down either Bath or Bordeaux enough to make that defence less vulnerable.
Okay, interesting. I mean, we'll see tomorrow whether it's Bath or Bordeaux that they go up against. Speaking of tens, Harry Byrne today, obviously a huge opportunity for him getting selected. He had moments, he controlled things well, but he looks nervous. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I think biggest game of his career. It's been well documented that the journey in Leinster not being a linear one for him. Brave move to go to Bristol last year. Certainly not the road less travelled for a lot of Leinster players. Have had 5 to 10 year careers as background players and maybe not getting the type of rugby exposure they'd have liked. So Harry took the bull by the horns, and Leinster agreed to it, and it collectively looks like a good decision. He's, I think, deservedly become first choice, but in the biggest game of his career to date, and it's very normal and natural this could happen, is the tendency to overplay your hand, to want to prove himself, you know, kicking restart. I think it nearly landed on the try line. I think that was a bit of adrenaline. You know, striking the ball beautifully, but not quite on target, doesn't make any difference. The key is they're going through the posts. For him, it's probably, compared to recent weeks, not the performance he'd have liked. I think he was kicking around 89% accuracy in Europe, so he didn't match that today. His all-round play just wasn't consistent enough, and that can give a calming effect to any team, but there's still a lot of quality there. You can see some beautiful distribution off both sides, some really nice running play. His place kicking strike, the actual quality of the strike is excellent. I don't think there's anything wrong. And again, kicking at 89%, that'll be slightly lower now after today, that success rate. But I think all round he's in a strong place. I think deservedly will start the start for Leinster in the final again. But he'll be very well aware of the things he can improve.
Yeah, when, as you said, if the strike is good, when it misses, and it was only by inches the couple of times he missed, what goes wrong there then? Is it just a lapse of concentration, do you think?
No, look,
Back to kicking again.
Look, it's pretty crucial. And in recent years, Leinster have chosen not, you know, kickable penalties. I commented, you know, it was almost a headline, Leinster to choose kickable penalty in knockout competition. It was almost a headline of its own accord, because in recent years, they inexplicably turned down kickable penalties. So Harry certainly goes after that. He's very dominant, and he almost gets the ball, and he's right in front of Caelan Dara saying, "I want to take it." It was 45 metres out to go. I think what at the time would have put Leinster 15 clear or something like that. So the attitude is right, the strike is right, the trajectory is good. The direction is a component part of it's like a golf swing. If he's only missing by half an inch, something's gone wrong in a millisecond in terms of a movement. But what you're looking for there is consistency of strike with kickers, and he is consistently striking the ball beautifully. I wouldn't be worried about those couple of misses.
Okay, which means it's fixable, I suppose.
Very, yeah.
Okay, and then the attack in general, I thought it was interesting that they were extremely patient in the build-up to all their tries. It wasn't maybe the flair we've seen, but it was the hard carries, getting over the gain line and eventually getting over the line. But what they didn't do was what we've seen in recent weeks since the return of Hugo Keenan, is a lot of those high balls up in the air with him chasing and getting the return. We didn't see a huge amount of that today. Why do you reckon that was?
I'm not sure. Potentially, Jaminet at the back is very good in the air. Ireland went over to Paris and put the ball up in the air to a very dominant back three and got massively punished. And perhaps that was a little bit of scar tissue from Paris back in the spring, and a similar mindset going out today. Maybe they said, look, let's not stick it up to a dominant back three. But their attack was at times very fluid, perhaps not the same flair we've come to know Leinster for in recent years, but attacking from multiple angles, there was a lot of zigzag type of attack. They'd go left, they go right, they go left, they go right. So often teams will go the same way multiple times. So that's difficult to defend when your passing is crisp and the runners are committed. And they had both of those things. So I think they left one or two behind them, certainly in that first half when their attack was really excellent. And then they showed a capacity to come down the gears in the second half and play a bit more pragmatic rugby, one out rugby, one pass plays, win collisions, hold possession, play a bit more of a kicking game, and I think that was appropriate.
Yeah, Gibson Park was central to a lot of that. Apart from his little fumble that caused that try to be disallowed, he was excellent today, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it's been the same for a number of years. When he's on form, like, he can not only decide the outcome of games, but he can decide the tempo of the game while he's in it, which is just an incredible skill set that he has. He appears, I mean, parts of his game appear to be still improving given his age. And like his kicking game today, some of the kicks he put in were just phenomenal. Long rangy kicks, low, not high, not box kicks, but like kicks for territory, to get out of, for Leinster just to get out of their exit strategies, but 40-50 metres down the field. So this part of his game still seems to be evolving. He doesn't seem to be losing pace. In fact, he's got the capacity to change pace more often, and again, I think he put his foot on the ball a number of occasions, slowed it down. Maybe when Harry Byrne wasn't doing that, he was taking over and saying, well, I'm going to control the tempo here. And you want that from your halfback. So yeah, he's characteristically kind of at a top level. Yeah,
and exactly, when maybe Byrne is nervous or those aren't coming, to have him be able to take over in those kicks as well, I mean, it was incredible. Another couple of players who were excellent today, Tommy O'Brien. I feel like he looks exhausted all of the time. He's like puffing and panting, but then out of nowhere he grubbers a kick through or makes a huge tackle or a huge break, and it's like, where did that even come from? But he seems to just find the energy somewhere every time.
Yeah, he has I think he shares a trait with Tadhg Byrne. They're incredibly fit, but they look tired from the first moment. I think they're just built that way. It's maybe perhaps the body language or the position of their shoulders. But where you look at Hugo Keenan, who never looks tired.
Yeah.
but it's certainly not to take away from Tadhg Byrne or Tommy O'Brien in terms of their contribution around the field. Both for Ireland and for Leinster today, Tommy. His work rate is astonishing. He goes looking for the ball. He comes into midfield. He's really added subtlety to his kicking game. I think the chips, you know, very hard to chip at breakneck speed and with control. He can chip with control. He generally, the ball bounces in space. He was unlucky not to get a couple of bounces in his favour. And again, he's got to be Jack Nienaber's long lost son for that defence, because he consistently leads it. He's brave. He hits man and ball. And that defence requires bravery. It requires leadership. It requires unwavering commitment. He's got all of those things. So yeah, he's been superb. Yeah, for Leinster.
And on the other wing, do you think Rico has found his place in this Leinster side? Obviously, we saw Robbie go off, but the likelihood would be that Jamie Osborne stays at 12, Gary stays at 13, if all fully fit, and Rico keeps his spot on that wing.
Yeah, I think so. Like, unlike the kind of Jordy Barrett debacle from last year, where Jordy didn't start the semi-final, but Jordy was central to Leinster function at that stage. He was a strategist, tactician, leader, kicker, runner, tackler. I think Ioane is far more of a strike runner, a wide type of striker, and he is reliant on how well everyone else is playing in order for him to flourish. And I think he's looked probably less dominant than people hoped this year, but it's probably because he's playing with a less than high functioning Leinster attack for long periods. He's a finisher, he's an out and out finisher. I think today, when Leinster were in full flow and attack, he looked pretty strong and made a lot of good decisions. But he'll probably have earned his entire transfer in the couple of tackles he made in the last minute or two, last gasp tackles, really to save the game when Toulon were on the crest of a wave. So
yeah,
it's I can see him maintaining his place. With, I don't know what James Lowe's fitness status is.
Yes. So you almost forget about him.
Yeah, you could certainly see James Lowe has enough credit in the bank if he's fully fit to get back into a starting lineup there. Tough on Robbie Henshaw today. Lovely to see him fully standing upright and having conversations with people after the game and having a laugh. I'm sure his family would have been concerned when they see that knockout. But yeah, he's unlikely to feature after a collision like that, I think, in HIA protocols. He may. But you're not losing any strength when you've someone like Osborne coming in. In fact, he's got that left boot, which adds variety in your kicking game. So, and Osborne's been a top quality performer for Leinster in Ireland for a number of seasons now.
Yeah, he was excellent when he came on, despite maybe a shaky form in the last two games for Leinster. Just on the injuries as well, speaking to Leo there, obviously Josh Van der Fleer, a head knock, but he'll go through the HIA protocols. And then Conan, a leg, but apparently he's being very bullish, saying he's completely fine. So we'll see how that goes. Just to finish up then, the scrum. I think everyone was coming into this game quite nervous about the scrum, and Toulon, a lot of people were saying that that would be an area that Toulon would target, but Leinster won a huge amount of penalties off their scrum. It was very impressive.
Yeah, and I think there was a concern about the absence of Tadhg Furlong from a personnel point of view on top of that. Tom Clarkson did a tremendous job. He was dominant against Kyle Sinclair. Kyle Sinclair's star has waned, I suppose, over the years. He's an older, considered an older player now, and probably at the tail end of his career. And Tom Clarkson's a young buck, you know, up and coming, hungry, aggressive, technically good, did an excellent job. So I think Leinster would be delighted with that. He then got the kind of amazing story of Jerry Kerr coming in out of the wilderness from club games and playing a European, heavily involved in the European Cup semi-final, you know, rags to riches story that you rarely see in professional sport. So I, you know, again, it speaks volumes. We have all criticised Leinster over the years for varying reasons, but in terms of the strength and depth that they've developed, they didn't do it by accident, and they've put huge work into the grassroots area of the game. They've got a bigger pool, they've a bigger population, but they've used it to their advantage. And you see that when they've had major injuries and major depth issues, and this year getting down into, you know, your Ireland being the same, but Leinster hugely affected by that
sixth
decimation
choice, you know, loose head, I think it was a couple
weeks ago. If you're getting into your sixth choice loose head, you know, a lot of teams in the professional area in major trouble there, and Leinster haven't been compromised. So I think it speaks volumes to the system that goes on and what Leinster have built over about a 20-25 year period. And again, why they get heavily criticised at times, despite all that, they're in another European Cup final. They're still in the conversation. They have been in the conversation for 8 years, and yes, they've not won since 2018, but they haven't gone away, and that shows a lot of bravery.
On the, obviously you're right, the depth has been incredible and Jerry Kerr has been incredible, but on the other side of that coin, having Andrew Porter back today was massive for Leinster. The two breaks he made in that first half, I thought he was in for a try. It was disappointing that he wasn't, but he, despite his yellow card, he got man of the match, didn't he?
He was damn close. I didn't hear who got it.
I think he did,
announced.
And I was going to say he deservedly did. Yeah. But even if he didn't, he was damn close.
Yeah, he's kind of a talismanic presence, I think, at this stage. He looks like a Viking. He's got this distinctive presence. He seems to have a heart of gold. He's loved within the group. He's a great ambassador for the game, but he's also someone who's just been an incredible servant for Irish and Leinster rugby, playing both sides of the scrum. He's gone through his own challenges in terms of the technical issues in the scrum and repeat infringements for the elbow hitting the floor, and he keeps turning up, he keeps fighting, and I thought he was massive today in terms of his influence on the group. And something perhaps we're not used to saying about him, but his line breaks.
Yeah.
Prop
on the loose.
He's using all that power and strength that he has in the gym to be more explosive than we've seen. So he looked damn fast there on a number of occasions, and fit and healthy. So yeah, really fantastic to see.
And it must have felt really good for him to not be conceding penalties at the scrum for once and winning them instead.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be lovely for him, for Leinster and Ireland, that storyline changes over time, and hopefully it does. I think he's been unfairly targeted at times. Hookers can bore in at an angle and put undue pressure on him. Nobody's anywhere to go when the hooker's illegally scrummaging against you. But that's gamesmanship, and teams getting inside referees' heads, and you know, they'll see an image that's very clear and they say, well, look, he's dropped again, but they mightn't necessarily see illegal scrummaging from the other side. So hopefully both Leinster and Ireland can get that narrative out there as well, that he's not a weak scrummager, but he's a scrummager that's come under pressure for sure, and hopefully he gets a bit of support and consistency.
Just lastly then, there was a lot of pressure coming into this game on the likes of Leo Cullen, Jack Nienaber, the whole staff in Leinster and the players, that if they didn't get this one, there were going to be unhappy fans, there was going to be unhappy media. Do you think this does enough to push that away?
Yes, I do. Simply put, I think to get to another European Cup final, you know, two teams get there every year. I think, is this the fifth one in 7 or 8 years?
Yes.
I don't think anyone's been to that many finals in Europe. So, yeah, you know, not getting it across the line is sometimes circumstantial. It's sometimes coming against, you know, all-time great teams, and, you know, not getting it across the line over in Tottenham a couple of years ago was against a great Toulouse side, and Kieran Frawley's last-minute drop goal being in real time before it went to extra time could have won it. So you're talking about tiny moments, but I think what has to be applauded and cannot be in any way dismissed is they just keep turning up. This time they're winning with a different defence than 3-4 years ago. They're winning with different personnel. They're winning with probably a less stylish attack, but they're there. And I think it takes pressure off any of their management. I think if they'd have lost today, there's a different question altogether. I think I would argue the point, I think they're going over to a European Cup final with a free shot, and there's very few Leinster teams have ever gone in like that. So, but we're going back to probably 2009 when they'd never won it before. After that, the expectation's been massive that they have a divine right to be in semis and finals, and they don't. Look at the quality that's out there in England and France. So I think it's to be applauded. Yes, there are problems. Nothing is perfect. No system is perfect. But they're in another final.
It's a great point. Hopefully we see them play with a little bit of that freedom and the weight off their shoulders, because I think that would be some spectacle. We'll wait till tomorrow afternoon to see who they take on, but Leinster will be in Bilbao in 3 weeks' time. Andy Dunn, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks,
all
Susanna.
Right. Thank you.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.